Welcome to the Story of God Pod. I'm Aiden Finn, and this is
Ethan Taylor.
And we're here to bring you the latest dish from the Story of God series at the Norton campus of Grace Church. Buckle your seatbelts, ladies and gentlemen. We're about to take a deep dive into season three of Sin. What if that was the vibe? I think we need to throw some appropriate music.
I love that vibe, actually.
I like that.
That was very intense.
Yeah,
very
I felt nervous about it. This, I'd like to say this at the top before you get to your questions.
Okay.
We're not sure where this is going to go.
We aren't.
Usually it's me just be like, listen, I'll throw the ball at Dan and he'll catch the ball.
This time I'm throwing the ball at you.
And I'm going to hot potato it to you.
Well, it'll be a good time.
There'll be rabbit trails.
That's all right.
We'll probably have to do a corrections and apologies episode.
We apologize for, yeah,
that
no,
thing,
I got you.
That thing Ethan said about dinosaurs.
All right. We just talked through Sin, we just had creation and conflict this past 3 weeks, kind of looking at this beautiful story of God that started off amazing and it didn't take long for it to, just
like a road trip with the young kids.
Yeah. Just tanks real fast. Sounds fun.
The beauty's in there. You'll find it.
But kind of the theme we ended with, you pulled this theme all the way throughout scripture of exile and sin, and our sin leads to exile. And I just wonder if you kind of set the stage again, remind us where we're at with where we see exile in the narrative of scripture.
Yeah, we talked about Sunday. It's just this theme that we all feel. Mm-hmm. I think we all feel, you know, in a lot of different ways. Dan talked about loneliness the week before. We can feel alienated in our lives when we find the job, the relationship, the home, the political party, the job. Did I say job twice? When mm-hmm. we find the thing that we were searching for, it always feels like, it doesn't feel like it still. And the end of that Genesis 3, which Genesis 1 through 3 we've been saying is so formative for the rest of Scripture and the rest of just how we understand it. It's some of the most like beautiful, comprehensive, beautifully written literature. You know what I mean? That gives us this picture. But it's scripture. It gives us this picture of our lives. And so Genesis 3 has so much in there. And at the end, it has those couple verses, 22 to 24, that because of the sin that God, in his grace, but also his punishment, it says they were banished from the garden. He drove them out. Mm-hmm. And that's a pretty sobering passage. Like, they were created for this. They're created for, J.T. English uses the language, in God's presence, in this place, the people of God. And now they are outside of that. And so that kind of begins this wandering reality theme that we see through the Bible of exile. Yeah.
Which you kind of used the narrative of Simba for Disney. You're like,
there was a lot of like, I could go this way, but a friend of mine's like, dude, no one knows what you're talking about. So,
but this kind of longing for home that's in all of us.
Yeah, he's away from what he's like. He had this identity, this future, this king of Pride Rock. He's like held up. Hey, Zabinya. It's like a... You're going to be king. Everything the sun touches is going to be good. And there's this whole mix up. His uncle's got, and then he finds himself like that scene after, you know, the scene everybody fast forwards of Mufasa passing. He is in the desert. He is away from home. His identity is gone. Timon and Pumbaa, they don't know that he's king. He's wandering. He's hiding. He's trying to make a life for himself apart from who he actually is.
And you're saying we all do that spiritually.
We are all Simba. Yeah.
But.
Yeah. And we do a pretty good job of it. You know what I mean? Like, if I can find the right guy, girl, situation, college, circumstance, brand, program, sports, if I can find the right thing, then it's going to satisfy this longing that we have. Yeah.
I think you said on a grand scale, like when we're all in exile, what we do, the solution is we build empires.
Yeah.
Humanity.
Tower of Babel. Like you see, Dan talked about this week too, but... He goes from Adam and Eve, like personal, into relational. You get into Cain and Abel. Cain kills Abel, and he goes into exile.
Mm-hmm.
And God provides for him, which is an interesting little microcosm of this. And you get to Noah and the flood, wipes out, starts again. We see the cultural mandate of Noah again, and it's kind of this pattern. But then you get to Tower of Babel, where they're going to make this tower work their way to heaven, which you at face reading, you're like, well, that's cute. Let them build what they want to build, right? But they're building it. They're trying to make their way to God.
Yeah.
Use God for their purposes. And it says in there, we want to make a name for ourselves.
Yeah.
And just that, you're like, yeah, that's the heart of all of us, that we're away from home. We feel kind of, I heard someone tell me when I was in the parking lot on Sunday, it's almost like Stockholm Syndrome. You ever heard that phrase?
No. What do you mean?
Yeah, I don't remember how the whole thing goes. I'm probably going to say it wrong. I think someone's going to be like, talk to me about it Sunday. A lot of people said the word ubiquitous to me last week, so it's something I didn't know when I say it in the podcast. But I think Stockholm Syndrome was like people who were like kind of kidnapped, kind of like this a growing affection for the kidnappers. You know what I mean? And so it becomes this like, it's kind of this historical phenomenon thing. And so almost that sense of like, we're driven away from home, what we actually want.
Mm-hmm.
And so we build our own versions, and that actually feels more comforting to us, like the version we build, because it's our own version of comfort and of security. And so that's what Babel is, making a name for ourselves, and we see that pattern play out as well.
In some ways, then, we're in exile. We're so used to running. We just keep running. Sometimes from the very, all the time, from the very person and thing that we need most. We're running for, like, I'm thinking through the story of Jonah a lot recently.
Yeah, you guys are teaching Jonah, yeah.
But, Jonah, he's off running in exile and runs away from the grace of God that continues to chase after him.
He is God's prophet. Like, God has called Jonah, like, I want you to do this very specific thing. You're my guy. And he's like, I'm going to run away.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of his disobedience, God exiles him into the belly of a fish.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
And in the midst of that, he calls him out, spits him back up on the sea, and is like, I'm calling you out for this purpose still. You know, you see that even in that story. Yeah.
Yeah. So so we build out this whole theme, narrative of exile. We try our own empires that we do on a global scale and on an individual scale. Like, we have our own empires that we try and the brand, the job, the career, whatever that we try.
New Testament, say that Romans says, don't conform to the patterns of this world. You know, this is business as normal, like the empire. Like when the Israelites were exiled in Babylon, like the way of Babylon was just how things were going. You know, they were thrown into the machine. And so I think it's just the cultural machine we find ourselves in, patterns of this world. Yeah.
Yeah. How do you think, like, this might be a very open-ended question, but what's the best way? God's intent was never necessarily for exile. He set up this world all perfectly. He wanted us to be at home with him.
Yeah.
Well, maybe what's God's purpose behind exile?
Yeah.
And then what's the best way you and I live this side, this post-Eden world? Like,
I totally hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
There's almost a piece of exile, like you say, like, we build our own kingdoms, we find our own way of being comfortable, find our own ways of being secure. It's another way of saying the same thing. You know what I mean? Because we get used to the same thing. And so some of these, they sought to be their own God. We build our own empires. You know, like, it's kind of the same theme kind of spelled out different ways. And so, I think to answer your question, if we read the story of the Bible, honestly, most of it is a people in exile. From Genesis 3 to... like, the people of God are wandering in the desert for 40 years. Abraham is following God by faith, kind of in exile from the Tower of Babel. God's people go into exile. So a lot of the prophets of the Old Testament, a lot of the Psalms of the Old Testament, they're in exile. And then you meet Jesus, who is... this angel shows up, this angel of the Lord shows up to just a teenage girl who's in exile. She's a Hebrew girl in this small town ruled by Rome. Like, they're a people in exile. And Jesus is born to his Jewish people, and they're in exile.
Yeah.
And then the church starts, and Peter writes, we looked at it on Sunday, says, to the exiles, spread out. Like, I think God's purpose for exile, I quoted some of it. Eugene Peterson says some powerful things about it. He has a kind of a commentary in the book of Jeremiah, which is one of the prophets who wrote during the Hebrew exile. But he says it's the place where faith matures, not where it dies. You know, and so there's something about that, that we are not in Eden. And then Hebrews, I encourage you to read Hebrews 11 too. Hebrews 11 kind of gives this picture of all these saints of the faith, the trials and realities they go through and how they were exiles, where I think it's almost while we're on this earth, while we are not in Eden and long for this Revelation 22, new Eden, new reality that God's going to restore and bring into being, that in between we're all in exile. And I think as much as some of it is our sin, some of it is him calling us out as exiles, it's a reality. So I think it strengthens our faith. It causes us to trust him. He's building something in us as his people that is important for the new creation, like he's working something into us, like faith is becoming real in the exile. And we all know this. No one likes being in exile. No one asks for it. But we all know that it's where our faith is either made or broken. You know what I mean? It's where it's solidified. It's where it's clarified. It's, I think one of the things Eugene Peterson said that I quoted on Sunday was exile helps clarify. You know what I mean? What was I just holding on to because it was empire, and what was actually what I believe about things? And so I think we've all felt that at different points, you know, where your faith is pressed upon, your maybe reputation is questioned or whatever it is, and it really causes you to separate what I actually believe about God from maybe just ideas I had about God.
Yeah, I think hearing you talk on it, I'm like, oh man, the purpose of exile is, I think God's trying to form a faith in us. Yeah. Like there's so much, you can know certain things, but once you experience, like you can know about exile or you can know about faith, but once you're experiencing it, that's when like faith is actually put to the test. It's in the fire. Yeah. It's being cultivated and grown in you. You kind of gave, so there's a book we've quoted several times from the front, but Faith for Exiles, he kind of goes through five things of if you were navigating exile.
Yeah,
David Kinnaman's writing it, and he's talking to the next generation primarily. Yeah. But do you remember those five things, or maybe we can talk about those five things and like urgency of
they were doing a study a couple years ago on kind of young millennials, Gen Z, and the next generation. Mm-hmm. And the people that they interviewed, they called them resilient disciples. And it was like a certain percent, maybe 11% of the people that would have had a faith background, maybe 11, I forget, was resilient disciples. And what marked them was an intimacy with Jesus, intergenerational relationships.
Yeah.
You've got it in front of you.
Let's
see. Intimacy with Jesus, meaningful intergenerational relationships.
Yeah.
Vocational discipleship, like the work I do matters. It isn't just a job. Countercultural mission, and then cultural discernment.
Yeah.
And so those things, and you see those things in the book of Daniel we referenced. Daniel is a case study of a young Hebrew who was in the Babylonian exile, and you see all those things. You know, you see these relationships with his peers. You see the mission. You see his intimacy with the Lord. You see his discernment. Like, he knew where that line was. It's like, you can give me my Babylonian name, but I'm not going to bow down to your God. Like, he knew where the line was. He knew what was important. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think each one of those five, I'm like, oh man, just so pivotal, so key for like how to navigate. It's almost like the roadmap for exile of like, how do I walk this road? Even if I don't know what it looks like, even if I don't know where it's all going, even if it feels like home is so far away, I'm not even sure we're going to make it there, you know, one day. It's like these five things that they give, it's just fascinating. Yeah. Like almost where you drop anchor in to try and make sense of the longing of home that we experience and have. And, and the pressures of living in the empirical way of things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Empirical is a good word.
Well, you know, it's a $20 word I found out. I wonder this, Aiden. You had somebody ask you a question recently.
Yeah, yeah.
What? Tell me the question, and let's just talk about it.
Yeah, we were talking about, so we're wrapping up kind of the end of this whole series on sin. And some of it is, we talk about sin all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, like we went through, which I'm glad we went through the book of Romans. No shortage there.
That was intense.
went through some of the minor prophets early this year.
Yeah.
You know, like there's a lot of, I mean, you had one message in there, you're like, land it on big. You know?
we talked about sin.
But we need to talk about sin because God's grace is just a nice thing if we don't feel the weight. And so there's like the very acute weight of like my sin, what I said, what I did, who I hurt, who I betrayed. Like there's our sin that we feel. And then a lot of what we've been hitting in this series is kind of these themes of sin, these concepts of sin, how we see in Genesis 3 this reality played out. And so this person I was talking to asked a great question. They asked this question that was, sin is a reality, but it's also the personal sin that I commit.
Mm.
And they asked her, like, man, as you wrestle with sin, like, what if I was to keel over and I did, and I had unconfessed sin in my heart? Because sin is a big deal to Jesus, and I know that he's forgiven me of my sin, but scripture talks about the reality of confessing sin and we don't want to deceive ourselves. And so he was kind of wrestling with that question of like, if I die with unconfessed sin in my heart, if I die with my sin, am I destined for hell? Like, am I destined for eternal exile from the Lord? And that could be an anxious place to live. So that was kind of the question that he would ask me. What would you say? You talk with a lot of young adults and stuff like that. What would you say to someone who asked you that question?
I just think what you just said about hell being eternal exile from God, like, it's almost like we choose exile, which that's fat. Like, we're like hell bent on being forever apart from home. That was a fascinating picture.
Yeah.
The unconfessed sin, I, as you're talking, I'm like, man, the picture of sin that just comes in my mind, if I don't see the, if I don't understand the size of my God.
Hi, while Ethan gets his phone, this is a commercial break. We would love to invite you to continue the conversation. If you scan the QR code on your app, there's just a weekly questions reading a Bible reading plan that you can participate with during the week. Now back to our regular scheduled programming. You were saying about sin?
If there's any hard questions, I just have a little button. Like, if I don't know the answer to that one, I get out of that one real fast.
Out of the lot. I love that.
Yeah, to go back to the question, I honestly think that in my brain the picture is that of a trampoline. Like when I see the significance of my sin, and I sink down into that, what I do is I explode out of that into the grace of God and go, oh my gosh, it's so much better than I ever realized. So I think when there's unconfessed sin, sometimes we think we have I think it's a wrong view of sin. I think it's a lighter view of sin, actually.
Like there's five that I'm dealing with and that's it versus the whole world.
Yeah. There's so much more sin in my life that I'm not aware of.
Yeah.
That I don't see, that I don't recognize. And so what happens is God's grace isn't all that good to me because I feel like if I can confess it, it's almost like a workspace, like which I don't know if this person was trying to get at that, but we're like, man, if I can just ask for forgiveness or ask God, like, hey, confess my sin before him, then I'll be okay, or then God and I are okay. His grace is so much better than that.
Yeah, yeah.
His grace is so much greater than that, that I think that's the essence of what we're talking about, like faith into the grace of God that even the sin I'm not aware of, even the sin that goes unconfessed in my life, that Jesus' sacrifice on the cross, his blood paid it all.
Yeah.
That is so much, it's so much better than I thought, more beautiful than I thought, and so much more powerful than I ever realized. What's your thoughts on something?
It's a good question because I think we all, some of us grew up in a religious background.
Yeah.
That feels like I have to make sure it's all accounted for, right? And then some of us grew up in a secular background that might not have been religious, but was religious in its own way. Like, you still had to do something. Mm. You know what I mean? Or it didn't matter at all.
Yes.
You're good, dude. Yes. You probably feel that a lot with worthy young adults, like our generation.
Mm-hmm.
You don't run into as many people in our generation who, like, I grew up in the Catholic Church or whatever.
My whole
life. You know what I mean? Like, religious background, regardless of what it is. But I think the fear is like, is my sin accounted for? Like, have I accounted for my sin?
Mm.
And I think that's the beauty you're talking about of grace, is that your sin has been accounted for.
Yeah.
And it has been separated as far as the east is from the west. Like, Jesus has dealt with our sin at the cross, past, present, future. So it has been accounted for. Now, I think the practical, so that's almost the justification piece. Then the sanctification, like, as I'm following Jesus, you and I as pastors here at Grace, we would strongly say that, like, sin is a big deal. Like, we talk to people all the time where you see sin chipping away, ripping away, distorting our views and our conversations and our relationships all the time. Sin's a big deal. You know what I mean? But I think almost this sinful tendency to deal with our sin is to turn inwards and feel like we have to carry it and deal with it ourselves. Because that can, in some ways, feel easier to manage. Like, if it's confessed, if it's off the table, I'm good.
Yeah.
Where it's almost harder to trust that Jesus has actually dealt with it and calls me to live in a way to be free of my sin, to confess my sin, to Romans says mortify my sin. I think it's Romans. And so I think sometimes it's that question of, is it accounted for? And it is accounted for, and it allows us to live into freedom and say no to sin, where if I'm still accounting for every single thing and bearing the weight, that'll crush you.
Oh, my gosh,
That'll crush you. And you talk to people like that, you know what I mean, that are like, remember someone said years ago, they're reading some stuff in the Old Testament, and it, you know, like, and you really feel that in the Old Testament, right? And that's the point, mm-hmm. is that you feel the weight of this. And they're like, someone needs to die for this. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, someone did. You know, and that's the...
Yeah.
Dan's going to get us into Abraham this week with the sacrifice, but...
Yeah, just reading through Exodus, and you're like, how bloody and horrific and intense the sacrificial system was for Old Testament of how to navigate and deal with guilt, sin, shame, that living in exile, they're like, someone has to pay the price for these things. And you just almost get... I was chatting with somebody recently on it, and they're like, I read through Leviticus and was like, wow, I'm way more grateful for Jesus than I ever realized. Yeah. I didn't realize I have to, there's just this acknowledgement that, the old self or the old Adam that's in me, it invades and penetrates and it's everything in it. Like, I'm so broken. More than I even think, but even if I was 100 times worse than what I can conceive of right now, his grace is still much, that much better. I think we just don't fully understand or see that often.
And that's sometimes living in exile. It's in that estrangement. It's in that pain. It's in that longing that we see the reality of our sin.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? Sometimes not so you're in that relational exile that you're like, oh, I knew this was hurtful. I knew this was an idea. And it wasn't until I saw the reality of that in this relationship or in this situation that I saw the weight of my sin. And that's God using exile for our benefit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
We could do this all day. And we will. I got a question for you, too. I'm just kidding. All right. Next week. Good stuff.